Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear a hearing aid to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty and left home when I was 14, I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing, and so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar, and with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400, and fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah, which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know, I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing how women can affect us.
Oh, absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have already hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you will get some phone calls. You'll get collectors calling you. But if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy, and it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed, and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. No, not for just to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it could happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes, failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, but, I mean, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. And so, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. My next guest, Matt O'Neill, real estate expert, as well as best-selling author. Matt O'Neill is a real estate broker and business owner of one of the top-selling real estate companies in Charleston, South Carolina. Matt O'Neill Real Estate. Matt O'Neill Real Estate, combining his years of experience in marketing, finance, and business leadership, O'Neill moved to Charleston, South Carolina in 2005 to begin his career in real estate and quickly became one of the Charleston's highest producing agents, reaching sales numbers in the top 1% of realtors by 2009. Matt O'Neill, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Good day to be alive.
Absolutely. It is a great day to be alive. I love it. All right, let's talk about your book. The book is about the new age in real estate. What's new with today's real estate economy?
You know, Bert, that's a great question. And it seems like every single day we've got something new with today's real estate economy. The face of real estate has been changing so dramatically since early 2000. You know, we saw the intense rise of real estate prices in the housing balloon and then the housing boom and then the housing bust through 2006 and 2007. And this book was designed to help people who needed to sell a home when other homes just weren't selling. And so that would be 2007 through 2012. It was a very fierce and competitive market, and you had to be priced extremely well, plus you had to be marketed extremely well in order for your house to sell. But today, you know, what's new with the real estate market, at least in our neck of the woods here in Charleston, South Carolina, we're seeing the housing market finally stabilize. And in some pockets and in some neighborhoods, we're starting to see a reduction in inventory levels, and we're starting to see those prices just trickle back up and get more into a healthy market than we've seen in a long, long time.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this, just your take, you know, as a business person, as a real estate expert, do you think that what the government did it make things worse? Did it make things better? What's your take?
You know, that's another great question. I can't say that it didn't work out. So,
right.
You know, obviously, we had a couple of stimuluses. We had the first-time homebuyer tax credit in 2009, and then they pulled another first-time homebuyer tax credit, and they would extend the deadline. You know, and they've kept these interest rates rock bottom, as low as you can go, and our housing market is starting to recover. So I'd say that the moves they made had to be made. You know, now we're seeing recovery, and they're not adjusting interest rates, and we're starting to see the inventory levels on homes across the nation be purchased. Some of the worst markets in the country, you know, you're talking about places in California where you can't keep a house on the market for a few days. Florida has finally come back. Phoenix has come back. Phoenix is one of the worst markets in the country. So I think that the moves that were made by the government were things that definitely helped us out of the slump that we were in.
Gotcha. Well, let's go back to your book. Your book focuses on luxury home marketing strategies. How much more difficult is it to sell a luxury home versus an average priced home?
It's much different in that luxury category than it would be in an average priced home category. And that's one of the things that is still lagging behind as far as recovery across the country. And we're seeing that here on the level in Charleston. We're seeing that luxury home sales are still slow to come back. But there's a reason for it. When you think about what is the definition of a luxury home, first of all, a luxury home is a house that only the top 3% of income earners can even afford. So you're taking 97% of your buying pool out of the picture. And so these homes sell a lot slower, and you've got to get a lot more creative about how you can attract that top 3% of buyers to want to have interest in your home. And then you got to make every opportunity count. So every lead that you possibly can get, you've got to treat like this could be the lead to make this house sell. And we usually see luxury homes that take anywhere from 2 times longer to sell than your average priced homes to sometimes 10 times longer to sell just because of that small buying population.
Sure. What are some of the best strategies home sellers should use when selling a home?
My advice to a home seller who needs to sell a home would be do your research when you're choosing your real estate agent. And, you know, in our town, there's 3,500 real estate agents and for about 350,000 people in the Charleston County. So there's a lot of agents to choose from, and your average real estate agent will sell, according to the National Association of Realtors, between 5 and 6 houses every single year. The average income for a real estate agent is somewhere between $35,000 and $45,000 per year. And when you look at the average agent, and this is who most people are going to choose, this is your friend or your neighbor or somebody down the street that your brother has recommended to you. They've got to pay rent, and they've got to pay for groceries. And after you take all of the living expenses out of $35,000 in a year, they don't have a whole lot of money usually left over to market your home correctly. So my biggest advice when it comes to selling a home would be to do your research and find the agents who are actually selling a large quantity of homes and who are getting a really high list price to sales price ratio.
You know what? I love that idea. I think that's a great strategy simply because I was not aware that the average real estate agent is making, you know, like you said, 35, 40, 45 grand a year. They're selling between 6 and 8 homes a year. So they're almost part-timing it. Is that right?
They're working their tail off.
Oh, really? That's working their tail off. Okay.
It is, and it's just that there's an efficient way to do things, but there's not a whole lot of training for these agents on how to get houses to sell. And you know, this is a full-time agent who will close 5 to 6 houses in a year. That's one
right.
every 2 months. You know, our team last year closed 88 homes. And that's the difference between a team that knows how to get your house closed, and doing that many closings every single month versus the person who's kind of winging it. Is an extraordinary difference when it comes to the systems that are in place to make sure that this house actually closes.
Gotcha. Well, let me put you on the spot a little bit. In your book, you talk about having a system. Again, you mentioned it just now, having a system and you know, in this case, having a team. How does that really help you in real estate? How does that help your customers?
That's a great question. You know, real estate, there's so many different facets to it. You've got helping buyers is a facet. You've got, as soon as you get a contract, all the details in the contract law that take place, the inspections, the termite letters, arranging the attorney. And then you've got marketing a home, and you've got working with sellers, and you've got lead generation. And there's just so many different hats that your traditional real estate agent has to wear. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on, and it may be a result of why they're not selling too many homes. But when you work with an agent who everybody has their own specialty, everybody can be an expert in their field. You know, so on our team, we've got a full-time marketing coordinator. She's got a master's degree in marketing, and her full-time job is to make sure the marketing for our listings is better than everybody else. And on our team, we've got a professional photographer. We've got a professional writer. Every aspect, we're trying to bring in an expert to make sure that they're the best person for this position. We've got a full-time closing coordinator. This person makes sure that our contracts are flawless. All the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted. And then we've got our agents separated into the buying aspect,
right?
The lead generation aspect, which we just have full-time agents who wait on the phone to answer leads as they come in to set appointments for our other agents. And then we've got agents who just specialize in getting listings to sell. And that's a lot different than your agent who is trying to wear 10 hats all at once. It's just very difficult for them to really become an expert in anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? It's also... You know, when you're in a situation like that, it's probably frustrating for the agent as well as the customer, because, again, it probably slows down the agent. The customer has to wait. There's a possibility of mistakes, and now you have to redo the whole paperwork. That in itself is overwhelming.
Well, Bert, think about it like this. You've got this agent who you've hired to sell your house. And they've got an out-of-town client in who needs to see 20 houses this weekend. Well, they're in the car schmoozing this client, taking them around, buying them lunch, showing them all these houses. They get a call from an interested buyer on your listing. Well, their phone's on silent because they're taking all of their time to spend with this buyer. How do you know that agent is going to properly handle an incoming your listing to make sure your listing sells? Versus it just going to their voicemail, and then that buyer who potentially could have been your buyer for your house going to the
right.
Next house. And that's the big difference between having a team of people versus just trying to handle all these aspects on your own.
I love it. All right, Matt, so I'm going to put you on the spot again. I'm going to play this this excerpt from an interview I did with Donald Trump. I want you to hear what he says, and then I want your reaction, good, bad, or indifferent. Here we go.
Sure.
Well, the good news is there's no money around, so you're not going to have a lot of overbuilding like you do in the housing industry. You know, they overbuilt 2 years ago, and now they're sort of getting rid. And you can make lots of good deals. If you have money today, you can make lots of good deals. The fact is there's a...
Okay. So now this interview is a little bit old, but since you were on and as a real estate agent, I wanted you to just listen to what he said. What do you think? Is now still a good time?
I don't think there has ever been a better time to be a purchaser in real estate in the history of the United States than there is right now.
Wow.
You are still looking at rock-bottom interest rates. You're still looking at rock-bottom prices. You know, our prices in our area are lower than in 10 years. So why would you throw your money away on rent? If you
Wait. Let me back up. You said that right
sure.
now in your area, the pricing mm-hmm. is at a 10-year low?
It is.
Wow. That is a huge motivator. Think about it. So you could buy a house today at, you know, whatever, at a deep discount, and you know, as it appreciates, it's going to appreciate probably a little bit faster because it's bouncing back, and so you get that perk as well. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's free money. I mean, if the bank's going to give you a 4% interest rate or a 3.6% interest rate, you can turn around and make 6%, or at least you hope you can, on
right.
your money in any other place. So I just think you would be crazy not to purchase a real estate investment with the interest rates where they're at now, knowing that you're buying at the bottom of the market. It may be the bottom of the market was last year, and it just depends on your market. But even if you missed it by a year, you're still on that lower end of the spectrum. It's an awesome time to be a home buyer. Now, if you're a home seller and you're looking at recovery, maybe you want to hold on a couple of years. It just depends on what your personal goals are.
Right, right. No, I love it. And you know what? I tend to agree with you and Donald Trump. I think now is a great time to buy. I think that there are so many opportunities, especially if you have somebody like yourself who's an expert, who's got a team behind them that can help you find the sweet spot that you're looking for, the ideal property that you're looking for. Now is the time to buy, and you hold on to it and probably double your money in, you know, whatever, 3, 5, 6 years. That's pretty good.
I wouldn't promise anybody that they would double their money, but maybe on the right deal.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, they're by all means, there is no promise implied or given.
There you go.
But you know what? I mean, bottom line is, I mean, I'm looking for the first time at small apartment complexes and fourplexes,
sure,
and stuff like that, because, like you said, it's a great time that, you know, there's deals still to be had, and if the interest rates drop a little bit, they're going to drop, just like I said, a little bit. I don't think you're going to see a full point drop. You know, I don't think we're going to see 2% money. We may see 3% money. I think that's about as good as it's going to get. And so between 3% and 4%, to me, there's no difference. You know, not worth waiting for. I just assume jump in. Hey, let me ask you this. Go ahead.
Sure. I was just going to say the federal government has come out and said repeatedly that they're going to keep interest rates low through 2014. So most likely they will. If we really do recover, there's nothing to say that they won't go ahead and raise interest rates. And
right.
from all the economists I talk with and from everything that we study in the market, you're going to see interest rates creep up over 6%, I think, pretty quickly after they take their foot off of the interest rates that they've been keeping down. And then every point of interest rate, you lose 10% of purchasing power. So if you talk about buying a $500,000 house today, if interest rates go from 4% to 6%, you're gonna be paying the same monthly payment as you would on a $600,000 house. You just lost $100,000 in equity based on your payment, just because your interest rate raised 2%. So that's one thing we try to remind our buyers when they're thinking, is now the time to buy? How do I time the market? I say, you really can't go wrong at this point.
I love it. That's great. We'll end on that. Hey, if someone has questions about moving to Charleston, South Carolina area, or about selling a home in your area, Charleston, South Carolina, how can they reach you? What's your website?
Yeah, the website's mattoneilrealestate.com, and if they would really be interested in reaching out to us, they can reach me on my phone, which is 843-619-0400, or at my email, which is matt@mattoneilteam.com.
Great. Matt O'Neill, thanks for sharing. We'll talk to you later.
All right, appreciate it.
All righty. Hey guys, we're having a wonderful show. We're gonna give you guys what I like to call a strong beginning, not a weekend. We're gonna take a quick commercial quick commercial break in English, and then we're gonna be right back speaking with Lynn D. Eldridge right after this short word.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're going to be talking with Lynn D. Eldridge. She's not only a motivational speaker, coach, published author. She's literally touched thousands of lives, achievements, accomplishments that most only dream up about when being the obvious expert in multi-level marketing. Multi-level marketing, also known as network marketing. We're talking about companies like New Skin and Amway and Herbalife. And for some reason, you know, sometimes people have a, what do you call it, a negative reaction. But Lynn D. is going to help us understand this phenomenal opportunity to make money. Lynn D. Eldridge, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Great. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so what made you get involved in network marketing or multi-level marketing, and also how long have you been involved?
I've been involved in multi-level marketing now for over 13 years, and I tell people, be careful what you pray for. You know, when we ask God to open up doors and to give us changes because everybody is stressed out about finances or time freedom. Well, that's really pretty much what happened to me. You know, back 13 and a half years ago, I lived down in the South Florida area. I was a single mom, and I owned two businesses. I owned a hair salon, and I owned a pet store. I was working 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. I truly had no time, and a customer came into my pet store. And this is what I mean by, be careful what you ask for. If you ask God to open up doors for you, then beware of the doors that are opening up for you. So a gentleman comes into my pet store who is a customer of mine, and he was in multi-level marketing. He shared with me his product, and I got it, and for selfish reasons, because I didn't want to lose a customer. Well be known to me, I loved his product. I loved it so much that I started telling people about it. And I invited him over to my salon to speak to 10 people that wanted his product. He came in, he told the story to them, they all signed up for the membership. He came over to me when he was done, he thanked me for inviting him into my salon, for referring him, and I said, I am going to refer you forever because I just love your product. He said, Lindy, do you know that there's a business attached to this? And what did I say? What most people say, I have no time. I have no extra time. And
right.
He said to me, well, that's the beauty of this business, Lindy, is that you're in business for yourself, but you're not by yourself. Well, all day, that's what rung into my mind, because immediately I was so quick to shut that door. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was
especially in your scenario, think about it. You're running two different businesses. You know, not two complementary businesses where maybe you could make it work, but you're literally working in two different industries. I would definitely would react the same way. But anyway, go on with your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I have to share with people, if you're asking for change, then be willing to do the change and listen to what is out there. So all that day that was ringing in my mind was that you're in business for yourself and not by yourself. I could have just made $1,000. Because of the system. And when Alex said to me, Lindy, it's as easy as you referred it to me. I'm your business partner. I have a vested interest in you. You share it. I come and tell it. They sign up. You make money. I make money. At 11:30 that night, I went home and I called him. And I probably woke him up and I said, Alex, this is the absolute only time that I have. Please share with me the business model of what you do. And I got involved that night, and it was the best thing that I could have possibly done, because when you could find the perfect company for you that you could become passionate with and the right mentors and leaders that what they say they're going to do, they do, the whole world just changes. So I worked it really very, very part-time for 2.5 years. I was being trained by the best of the best. And it ended up that this industry, multi-level marketing that everybody shuns, ended up paying me out more money than both of my businesses combined. And when it was consistent, I sold both businesses. And for the last 9 years, it's my turn to pay it forward. And it's been a great ride, a great ride.
All right. So now let's talk about this, because I'm looking at your bio, and I see in here that you've been involved in four different companies. And that also, out of these four different companies, you've had some failures. So let's talk about the failures. Why do you think you failed four times before succeeding in multi-level marketing?
Very, very good question. You're absolutely right. So we'll say that I've been involved in five because successfully I've been involved with one, really now two, failed four times miserably. And what do I contribute that to? I'll contribute that to I wasn't passionate about the product. I'll contribute to that that I wasn't with the right leaders, the mentors. So many times people will say that, you know, they want you to come into their business, and as soon as you sign up, they're gone. They're gone.
Right.
So I failed miserably, and I probably just didn't give it what it took to take, to be honest with you. So I blame some of the failure on me, but I also blame it on the people that brought me into the business, that promised me the world, that promised me that they would be there. None of them were until the right mentor and leader came along, which I'm very proud to say taught me how to be a great mentor and leader.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so you've been doing multi-level marketing for how many years now?
13 and a half years.
13 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about this, because you know I like the fact that you, as an entrepreneur, can talk about a typical business as well, because you have that side of you as well. So compare that to multi-level marketing. What is it that you like about multi-level marketing compared to a traditional business?
No overhead. No brick and mortar that I have to go in from 9 to 5. No employees do I have to worry about. No insurance, no compensation, no workman's comp. Should I continue? And then I come into this wonderful industry where now I get to work from home, spend time with my daughter, travel, do as much as I want to do. My home is my office. I get to take advantage of tax write-offs and everything else that comes with it. So weigh that one out.
Right. Right. So for you, I mean, you were able to give up a lot of the, inherent risk, like you mentioned, workman's comp, employees, you have rent and all that, and then you're able to develop this ongoing income. Now, let me ask you this. Since you've been involved with it for 13 years, have you seen technology come into play where you mentioned no inventory? Is that the reason that there's no inventory is because now technology is able to move things around quicker?
Well, no inventory, because I no longer have to stock my shelves. When people can
right.
go to my website and they can order a product and the company that I'm involved with will go ahead and mail and ship out the order, hello.
Right. They fulfill and you reap the benefits.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me ask you this. We've talked about some of the things that you said attributed to your failure. What do you think attributed to your success?
What contributed to my success is, number one, I was coachable, teachable. I was willing to forget everything that I knew about sales, because it's completely different. When you start an industry, the worst thing that people could say is, I know how to do that. I know how to do that. Well, if
right.
you've never been in this industry before, you need to forget your past, and you need to understand that what you've just got involved in, which I absolutely love, is called University in Motion. You will learn while you earn. Duct tape your mouth and learn while you earn. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
It is. No, it's...
Oh, my God.
When it happens, I think it's a very beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. I didn't have to go to college. I didn't have to worry about having a student loan. I didn't have to worry about any of that stuff, because here I am learning a wonderful industry where I literally have grown a team nationwide. And guess what? Even though it's called network marketing for a reason, because your business is literally growing out of your control. You're probably never even going to meet 90% of the people that are in your organization, but yet they're all contributing to your income.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What do you say to the person who says, you know what, I've tried network marketing a couple of times, I didn't make any money at it, you know, it didn't work for me. What do you say to the skeptic out there?
Well, you know, I go through a series of questions. Number one, I ask them if they were passionate about the product. I ask them about the leadership that brought them into business. And I also ask them, were they following the very duplicated system? Because seriously, no matter what network marketing company that you get involved in, it's all the same rules. It's all the same action. And, you know, and I tried to build a rapport and build a relationship and find out, sure, can I work with you? Do you want to work with me? Because you're not going to be working for me. We're going to be in business together.
Right.
But we're not going to be by ourselves. So, you know, when you ask a few questions, you really get to figure out why people have failed. And sometimes it's because they weren't willing to do the activity that needed to be done. They weren't willing to be coachable and teachable. And then other times, which I hear a lot, it's because people brought them in, and as soon as I signed up, they said, good luck, you're on your own.
Right.
That's
well, you know what's so funny? What's so funny to me, or what's so interesting, is that some of the things that you mentioned really would make you successful or a failure in any industry. I mean, you talk about being coachable and teachable. You know, again, you know, when you think you know it all, that's typically when you make your biggest mistake. So you have to be, you know, open to being coachable and teachable. You mentioned about following the system and again, be willing to work it. It does take work. It is a business. It's not a free lunch. And so, yeah, can you know, there are some people who can go in there and make hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, and some do it per month, but it doesn't happen overnight. It does take work. And I think that sometimes people, you know, I see this all the time where people want to reach a certain goal, whether it's make more money or lose weight or gain weight or, you know, whatever, do whatever their goal is. But like you said, they're not willing to put in the time to get that result. And they chalk that up as, well, it didn't work for me. The reality is they didn't work.
Mm. That's true. And you know what? We train, my husband and I, we train generically in the industry because we love to help people, period. And
right.
Here's also what happens is that when, first of all, when you get involved in network marketing, you should not be quitting your job because it truly is a business that is designed to start off part-time and then work itself, just like it did for me, in 2.5 years. Now, with that being said, with the economy the way it is, if people are looking to do this full-time, then get serious. Treat it like a business. Just because you're home doesn't mean that you should be in your pajamas at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Treat it like
right.
a business. Get up, take a shower, act like you're leaving work. Close that office door, and you are at work. The laundry doesn't have to be done. The dishes aren't going to have to be done. The dog should not be walked. You wouldn't be home anyway. So
right.
it's discipline as well.
Yeah, and I like that. Treat it like a real business because ultimately that's what it's about. I mean, you know, I've heard people complain, you know, about network marketing not working for them. And like we've discussed, quite often is the fact that, A, they didn't follow the system. They didn't really work it. They didn't treat it like a business. They weren't teachable. And you know, I think that, to me, great benefits to network marketing is also one of the barriers, and that is it's so inexpensive to get in. You know, for a few hundred dollars, you can get involved in just about any network marketing company out there. And for some people, that's just not enough investment for them to really treat it like a business. You know, if you were going to open up a franchise and you were going to dump $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 into your franchise, you know, that would make you stand up and notice and really roll up your sleeves. I think, you know, with network marketing, man, if it doesn't work, I only lost a couple hundred bucks. That's the problem. That's some of the thinking that makes people not take it seriously. Is that your – do you agree with that, or what's your thought?
Oh, my God, I agree with that 100%. You know, when I opened up my hair salon, it was $50,000 out of pocket. When I opened up my pet store, it was $60,000 out of pocket. And I can assure you, whether I had customers coming in or not, I was there to unlock my doors and stay there until closing. So you're absolutely right. And my mindset was when I make an investment, and I made my investment in the company that I succeeded with,
right.
I took it very seriously. Because what I looked at is that the amount of money, it was almost $1,000 to get involved, okay? And the amount of money that I put into myself, because that's what it is, you're really believing in yourself,
right.
I knew that I had to get that back because that was food on the table for my daughter.
Sure.
I couldn't afford to lose $100, $50, $1,000. everybody needs to take their commitment very seriously. And whether you're getting in network marketing, multi-level marketing, and you're spending a few hundred or a few thousand, what you need to do is look at it as you just put in $50,000. And if you do that, you will reap the rewards.
Absolutely. All right, so let me ask you this. You know, again, you've been involved in the industry almost 14 years. You've had some great successes, some failures. If you were to give a final aha tip, what would it be?
I would tell everybody to really find that network market, because there are some major, wonderful companies within network marketing. And I would very much encourage them to do their due diligence. Find something you're going to be passionate about. Don't go after the money, because the money will come. And, you know, let me leave you with this. There are many companies out there that you're giving money to and you're not getting any product or service back. Hello, that's a red flag.
Right.
You know, if there's not a product, if there's not a service that you could utilize and you're not getting, that is a red flag. And I suggest very highly run. Run as fast as you can. But when you can find a company that is solid, you can get passionate about the leadership you believe in, and when they look at you in your eyes or they speak with you over the phone, that you could hear that they're true blue. And do your investigations. Do a little bit of due diligence.
I love it. Hey, we're out of time. Lynn D., thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate you, and good luck to you as you continue to be successful in your endeavors.
Thank you so much. And may I go ahead and give my phone number out for anybody that would like to reach me? It is 603-660-6010.
Hey, we're out of time, Lynn. Guys, we're going to be right back. When we come back, we're going to be with Laura Wage. We're going to wage war. No. I'm just kidding. We're going to wage war on online marketing. No, I was trying to do something there. Couldn't figure it out. Hey, we're going to be right back with Laura Wage right after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're wrapping it up. We're going to make it a fantastic show. My next guest, Laura Wage, best-selling author, Outfront Business Building Strategies from Frontline Entrepreneurs. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much, Bert. I appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your story. You were involved in corporate America for nearly 2 decades. What led you to make the leap from corporate America to online entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've actually had a lot of people ask me that because they see safety in traditional business. And
sure.
For me, it was sort of a double-edged sword. At the time that I made that jump, I had a daughter that was wrapping up her eighth grade year, about to go into high school. And I looked up and realized, oh my gosh, the first 14 years of her life had just passed me by. And I'd been so busy getting up every morning, going to work, coming home late at night, that really they'd just gotten there before I knew it. So I knew I wanted to figure out a way to be able to work from home and be able to set more of my own schedule. So I had some very personal drivers that led me to want to make that transition. But from a business perspective, the writing was so clearly on the walls that everything was migrating to more of an online perspective. Even if it cracks me up, even when I'm walking through somewhere like Target and I look at people in the aisles who are comp shopping on their phones to see if they can get a better price somewhere else. So all roads lead to online. It's just
right.
A matter of how you're going to leverage it.
That's right. You know what, and you're right, I've seen that as well. I've done it myself. When this one app came out, I did it for a very short time, and then I realized, you know what, I'll just shop from home first, and then depending on how quickly you need it, you'll go out to the brick and mortar stores. All right, so help me understand your business model. Are all of your transactions and interactions online?
Mine personally are not. So I do have online products. So as an example, I teach a lot of people how to make the transition from employee to online entrepreneur. So I have online education products. Like I have one called Perfecting Pinterest, where you can learn how to use Pinterest for business online. That's completely online. I don't touch it. But then I also have offline corporate clients that I'll go in and work with them and teach them how to bring online strategies into their businesses and be able to enhance their business model. So I think the really important thing is whatever it is that you do, whatever it is that you love, you just got to look at where the fit lies. And even when you have an all-online business, sometimes it still makes sense to have offline methods, especially when it comes to networking, being able to meet joint venture partners. So I don't believe, I do know there's people out there, and I have some friends that are 100% online, but I don't believe that's always the right choice. It's a very small percentage that 100% online applies to.
Gotcha. You know what, and you're right, depending on what it is you're doing, the price model or price has something to do with it. I personally would rather pay a little bit more and be able to get somebody to help me either via chat or via a phone number when I need help versus getting something dirt cheap where you have literally no assistance if you have a question. I just find that a little disheartening sometimes.
Absolutely. And it's all kind of come full circle because in my corporate days, I actually worked for a public company and I was responsible for things like the god-awful phone trees that you can get stuck in where you call a business. Yeah, and you're stuck forever in their loop. So I was the person that would go out, design that, and sell it. What's interesting to me is that you've got businesses like Discover Card who spent millions and millions of dollars to have these automated voice responders that are now pulling them out to replace them with live people. Because as much as we've moved towards an online presence, from a global perspective, people are understanding that it's still really important to have that human touch and to have an element of it that's personal. So that's one of those areas that especially when I meet with corporate clients, we look at how can you make your online presence more personal so that people feel like they're still in a relationship and part of a community.
Yeah, and you mentioned that human element. I think now, because of technology, because all the stuff, I think we're doing that pendulum swing back to, as you said, back to the human interface, because I think a lot of people have just gotten tired of not having it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Technology, in my view, should be something that enhances your process, enhances your business model, but in no way replaces your people. So when positioned the right way, you really can have a business model with an online presence that's integrated in a way that is almost fun, that people really like and they come back to over and over.
Let me ask you this. Obviously the internet is just this massively broad, system out there. I mean, there's literally thousands of things on there. As an online entrepreneur, are there certain niches that do better than others online? What's your take?
Yeah, you have to really always evaluate every aspect of your business. And there's a really interesting one that I came across the other day that would not work as a brick-and-mortar business. The only way it works is as a real online business that then sells to some stores as well. And I don't know if you've seen this or heard of this yet, but there is a new product out called Pickle Pops. Have you heard of this?
Pickle Pops.
Yes. Okay. So
no.
It's bizarre. It's basically pickle juice in one of those plastic sleeves, like the old freezies that we would have as kids, but it's pickle juice. So you bring it home, you pop it in the freezer, and you get a pickle popsicle. Now, if somebody opened up a pickle popsicle store and paid all that money to have a brick-and-mortar business and pay rent, chances are it would not work. However, as an online business, pickle pops are working really, really well. So well, in fact, that Bob's Pickle Pops wound up getting a contract with Walmart, and now his pickle pops are being sold in certain Walmarts. So it is really interesting, because I think that the Internet, what it's really done is opened up opportunities for people that didn't necessarily have them on that grand of a scale previously.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we hear those success stories quite regularly where somebody is discovered on YouTube, in this case, Bob's Pickle Pops, you know, who are, again, discovered online and are going to be now part of the Walmart family. You know, that is, what do you call it? It's amazing and really a home run for the Pickle Pops.
Absolutely. But it's a perfect example of, you know, do certain niches work online? I think that the beauty about being online is that there's almost a market for anything. As long
right.
as you know how to dive into the right keywords, see what people are searching for, you can identify markets for almost everything. And then as long as you curtail your online marketing plan properly, you can serve up your information to the right audience. And it's much more difficult to do that when you're talking about a brick-and-mortar business. People have to find you when you have a physical building. And when you have an online business, you can actually find them, which puts you on a whole new playing field.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also now with the entry of mobile services or mobile phones, or not just mobile phones, but you have iPads and whatever, you know, there's a whole new added demographic there that is, again, you know, I think they're saying it's 20% of all Internet searches are based on some mobile device, and that's only going to get bigger. So again, there is a new, what do you call it, a new way to get in touch with your customers.
Yeah, and, you know, along those same lines, it's also important, and in my mind, this is part of what led me to go down the online entrepreneur road, but it's also important to look at trends. And I guess I have somewhat of an advantage because I do a lot of work with college kids that are looking to make a move into entrepreneurship, as well
right.
as having a 17-year-old that's involved in a national marketing committee. So one of the things that I noticed was that this younger generation, you know, everything from 25 down to about 16, 17, they are on their mobile devices constantly, all of their
right.
shopping, everything that they do is done online. And when you look at these are the future generation of shoppers, that's who we want to be building our next business model towards, because that's becoming the norm as opposed to the exception.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. We're almost out of time. You know, what's the most important piece of advice you would share with someone, let's say your best friend, who's looking to launch an online venture?
Yeah, it's definitely a three-pronged approach. You have to make sure that you do the proper research so that you know you're serving up to the right target market. You want to figure out what's the biggest problem that that target market is facing and be able to create a product or a service that is actually solving that problem. And then just make sure that you have a strategic, and that being the key word, a strategic plan written, so that you can achieve the specific goals and the specific problems that you're trying to solve.
I love it. Laura Wage. I want to give out your website. I appreciate the great content. It's Laura, LauraWaage, Laura Wage with an extra A in there, laurawage.com. Laura Wage, thanks for sharing and stopping by today.
Thanks so much, Bert. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, guys, we're wrapping it up. Have yourself a great weekend. Go out there and do some stuff. Maybe think about getting started on your online venture. Check out laurawage.com. If you like multi-level marketing and thinking about network marketing, you can check out that content as well. Have yourself a great weekend. As always, we appreciate you here at
Money for Lunch, available 24/7 at moneyforlunch.com.
And hopefully you can get some usable stuff out of that, because I think it was great. I'd probably send me a check. Let me know if you need to do that. Take care, guys. Have a good weekend. Thanks a lot.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.